what do we know? What can we say about leader Judith Collins, National Party leader? Now, she has come out and she has criticised the Labor government and their strategy, vaccination strategy for Māori. Before I answer, I want you to sort of like answer this in the same with this in mind. So she criticises the Labor government for Māori vaccination, not getting that right for Māori. But you know, she criticises Māori for a range of issues, including just so many issues. We just can't get a sense of where she's placed when it comes to Te Ao Māori. We don't get a sense of her.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about the wider health situation. And I don't think you would find anywhere any press release that talks about National not wanting good health outcomes for Māori. And in fact, it's the exact opposite. The argument for Māori is not around quality health results and quality health outcomes. It's actually the mode of delivery. So, but if you dig into what Judith is saying about the vaccination strategy, she's actually saying that it's an abysmal delay, an unwarranted delay for all vaccination rollout. Now, if you think about it this way, the Delta virus arrived in New Zealand in April, and the government didn't launch a strategy for dealing with Delta till July. So we're talking the best part of 4 months delay. Same thing last year when there was a discussion about a vaccination strategy. The government appointed and assigned budget to paying for marketing 3 months before they appointed and signed budget for vaccination negotiations. So, there's been all manner of reasons as to why these delays. And I think Judith is absolutely right. We need a commission of inquiry because the whole process has become so convoluted. We had this elimination strategy. Now we've got traffic lights and subclusters and 3.1s and 3.2s and 2s and fixed borders. And, oh, my gosh, it's no surprise whatsoever that people are, A, frustrated and, B, confused.
Oh, I see. So, going back to my point, albeit a very busy one, I thought, we were hearing from Judith Collins about, what it was like for Māori, but actually she was talking, she was talking holistically, generally around the slow rollout of vaccination for everyone, including Māori.
I actually think predominantly most parties have missed the point in relation to Māori vaccination rollouts. In my day job, I spend a lot of time talking with iwi leaders, Māori businesses, and I know from first-hand experience that despite great efforts in a number of government agencies, Māori still have that seed of doubt in their minds about the bona fides of the government, about the true intent of the government. So it should be no surprise to any party that when you're rolling out a vaccination that is going to be testing and concerning for great groups across our community, that if you're now going to talk about a part of our society that already has its concerns and its trust issues with the government, that you're going to need to take extra steps. And one of the things I think we tend to miss is that you cannot mandate or attempt a policy implementation for Māori, for Pan Māori. You've got to look at them in their iwi, hapū, whānau units, because the needs in the far north are different to the needs in the far south. And in fact, if you look at Māori vaccination rates, and I'm talking double vax rates here, the two highest vaccination rates for Māori are two of the Auckland DHBs. Third is Capital and Coast down in Wellington, and fourth is Southland. Now, they are sufficiently geographically separated that I would almost bet that the reason those vaccination rates are higher for those Māori there is because the relationship and the working with the local hapū is much more integrated with the people, between the people and the health service providers. And so if you look at the rates right across the mutu, you can see those where the rates are low. I'd almost bet that the interaction isn't the same collegial sort that it is where the rates are high. So you've got to tailor for the communities that need.
Yeah, I I would agree with you there, absolutely. And talking about, you know, communities and groups of whānau, I've just finished speaking with, you know, Mongrel Mob Life member Harry Tam. He said, you know, and, you know, well, you know him, and he said that, you know, he's been working around the Motu and, you know, gang leaders have been working with whānau and, you know, there has been a, you know, a climb in vaccination rates. I said, oh, you know, why were they hesitant? He said they weren't hesitant. They just didn't want to listen to, you know, I mean, and that's fair enough, isn't it? You know, so you you put people who people recognise, see as being one of them, and then you kind of get your ears on. You don't kind of send, you know, somebody from Wellington, you know, from...
That's right. You know, so we see here in Christchurch, we see the Indian community being led to the vaccination booths by Indian whānau leaders. We see Matthew Mark, the CEO of the Christchurch City Mission, who's working constructively with the homeless people. They have his confidence, he has their confidence, and so they are accepting what he has to say. So you've got to tailor the delivery to the community, and I think that's a point that in a lot of policy areas, government doesn't get it.
Absolutely. Now, I was a little bit loath to bring up this next issue, but... it's the Serious Fraud Office investigation into Ōtautahi Business, a business group, and we see that some of our rangatira, as an example, Sir Mark Solomon, has lost pūtea by being investing in a company. Ngāko Aroha Investments, Power to Me, Aotearoa Tāpui Limited.
Yes.
Do we have any additional information on this?
Yeah, sad to say that this has been a problem that's been around probably since the start of the year. And so what the situation is, I know through contacts through my church and contacts through whānau, that there are many, many individuals, couples, families with young children who have taken these two speculators at their word and have invested differing amounts of what they could afford. And they were promised, they were supplied contracts for the investment. The contracts each had different repayment terms and repayment times. But in general terms, they guaranteed a profit margin or an interest of X percent that would give a guaranteed return of Y profit value. Not one of those came to fruition. I was approached by some really, really upset young, recently married couples who had invested in good faith because they knew the person through their church. And knew the person through previous family gatherings between the whānau. They put their money with these people. They were now 3 months overdue, had received nothing. What concerns me in a situation like this is the advice that people are getting. And in this case, I think about 95% Māori whānau. So the advice they're getting, and especially the ones that I dealt with, they showed me a copy of the contracts that they'd been given, not with the paper they're written on, absolutely full of holes. But they didn't think to get advice because they were played. Basically, they were played. But the concerning thing for me is that the media are focusing on three names because they're public figures. Tarmac, Julian, my good friend, even though he's a Hurricane supporter, and Joe Moody. There are literally scores of families who have invested more than those three people who are, to me, the anonymous victims. So I think we need to think about this. These people are absolutely right to be investigated by the Serious Fraud Office. What they've done is fraud. I spent 5 years in the Wellington Fraud Squad. I know exactly what they've done and how they've done it. They'll go for a skate. But it doesn't mean that any of those whānau are going to get their money back. And that's the sad thing.
It's going to take some while, as it usually does with the SFO, is it not? You know, aroha to all of those that are concerned. Do we know how much pūtea, though, is involved in the case? Is there any indication?
There's an indication that it's early seven figures. But I don't know the veracity of that, but it's certainly the total number to me is kind of irrelevant. What I know is the individual whānau, the hurt, because they've given their only savings. And on some occasions, you know, and the golden rule of investing is you've got to be able to afford to lose it before you can invest it. So if you really, really don't need it and are prepared to take a chance, good luck. And if you lose it, then you know what's coming to you. But these people didn't get that advice. So these people invested what they had and they've got nothing more. And at a time like this when people are losing their jobs, they're not getting a chance to do overtime, they can't, they're restricted in all their social activities, they're sitting at home feeling really, really bad about themselves. And that's another element that we don't think about, the wellness of our people.
Ka pai. Well, all the very best to everyone involved. You're at level two, we're at level three, step one. Very confusing, but there you have it. Now, some of our retailers can open, but our hairdressers, you know, some of the really smaller businesses, ones that, you know, really need to, you know, they're living from hand to mouth, literally minute to minute, hand to mouth. How are the businesses doing down there with your level two, and particularly our Māori businesses as well? Well, how is everyone doing down there? Can we take, you know, some ihi in how you're performing, you know?
Yeah, so this time last year when Christchurch came out of lockdown, a great number of companies survived by the skin of their teeth. The general concept is you should have 3 months cash in reserve for cash flow during a crisis. Most companies were at about 30 days, so they used up their reserves. They survived last year. This year, they have no reserves because they haven't been able to build it up. So they're struggling. And when now they're open level two, sure, they've got people coming into their premise. But because they're socially distanced, they're seated, not standing, they're down to something like probably a third to 40% of their capacity, especially in the hospitality sector, but they've got to hire the same number of staff. So the overheads are high, the revenue is still low, and what's even worse for some of our suppliers is that the cost of getting their product in some cases has tripled and quadrupled. So while they're open, I think you'll find that their journey to oblivion is just a little bit slower than what the journey is for those in Auckland. It's a real struggle, you know, and we're hearing some terrible stories in Christchurch and some even worse stories of what's happening in Auckland. When I look at our Māori businesses, if we take some of our tourism sector, oh my gosh, Struggle Street. Look at Whale Watch Kaikoura. As an example, we know what a successful entity they've become, but they survive on tourist foot traffic, of which there's next to nothing. But it's slightly complicating for an outfit like Whale Watch Kaikoura. They also run Whale Watch Brisbane. So how are they getting on with keeping that element up and running, given the COVID situation in Australia, and given the difficulty it's got to be being in Kaikoura and trying to run an entity that you can't go to. So especially in our export space, our Māori whānau are suffering, whether it's from Christchurch or Auckland. We have issues with certain markets that aren't taking the quantity of stock they've taken before, but most importantly, the cost of getting the stock to market has tripled and quadrupled. So it's an issue for all businesses to deal with. I was in a cafe today, a Māori couple running it. I don't know, seating capacity of 40 or 50, four of us in there. And they've got the same number of staff have to be on because they've got to serve. You can't go and get your food. You've got to be served. You've got to keep the staff there so the overheads are going through the roof.